TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox, lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Political neutrality. Not with Timothy Shea. This is The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to The Reckoning. It's Dr. Knight on TNT Radio. We just had Dr. Eric Napudi, and now I've got like to welcome back my good friend, Dr. Mark Sherwood. Mark and his wife, Michelle, have the Functional Medical Institute in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mark ran for governor this year against Kevin Stitt. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Timothy. I really appreciate you, man. And interesting, I was talking to Dr. Napudi just this morning. Great guy.
Oh, a fantastic guy, isn't he? And could you believe with everything that they've been throwing at him, how upbeat and positive he remains? I mean, it really is a testament to inner strength.
Yeah, we're actually going to start doing some work together. I appreciate him as a human being. I think he's a great man. He gets it. I believe he's doing things for the right reasons to go out here and communicate hope and healing for the world and really glorifying God. And I honor that.
Yeah, it's clear. We talked a little bit about it, and I said I didn't want to get all tent revival on it. But, you know, the Lord is so willing to pour out an abundance of grace if you're willing to accept it. And Eric has certainly accepted it. I know you and Michelle have accepted it. Your lives have been blessed as a result. But it's because you really have a servant's heart. Eric's got a servant's heart. Michelle has a servant's heart. I try to. I'm a fan of John Maxwell. And I don't know if you know John Maxwell.
I do.
John Maxwell was a pastor in Indiana. And he started giving motivational talks. And then he started giving seminars for people. I worked for a mutual fund company in Bethesda, Maryland, back in the late 80s, and we had a company retreat in Annapolis. And the keynote address, it wasn't an address, the keynote experience was John Maxwell, and we were all in a room, and he gave a presentation, but it was an interactive presentation. And he said something that I'll never forget, Mark. He was wearing a pair of glasses, and he took off his glasses a couple inches in front of his face and kind of waggled them. And he said, when you're communicating with people, you have to be aware that we've all got these. He's waggling his glasses. He said, and I don't mean spectacles. What these are filters. And everything you say is filtered out, because everything that's in your mind isn't being conveyed necessarily by the words you're using to express yourself. And likewise, people receiving what you're saying are going to filter it through their own experience, through their understanding of what you're saying. And that's where miscommunication arises, is when you speak without realizing that your words are being filtered by someone else and how they might be filtered. You're not tailoring your message to your audience. And it was a very simple concept, but it stuck with me in business, in radio, what I do. I try to convey my thoughts accurately in a way that they'll be received in the manner in which I intended them. But John also wrote a book called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
Mm-hmm. Read that book.
And
great
folks,
book.
It's a fantastic book. And folks, it comes down to one thing. And really, it's what Jesus taught us at the Last Supper when he washed the apostles' feet. Here was God incarnate, the Word made flesh, washing the feet of his followers, demonstrating, not by word, but by deed, what it means to have a servant's heart and how important it is for a leader to have a servant's heart. Because Mark, if you're leading and you don't have a servant's heart, you're going to lead people off a cliff. You're going to lead people with ego, with hubris. You're going to try to manipulate people to have them achieve what you want them to achieve for you. And if you have a servant's heart, it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah, and there's a fascinating aspect that I feel compelled to add to that within 2 points. Number one, Jesus actually washed the feet of Judas during that process, which is crazy. Yeah. Now, the second part of that is with leadership. And I got to tell you, Timothy, my wife and I are learning this every day, more and more and more, is to lead, is to serve, and it's to lead and serve people that might not really like you very much, you know,
or not want you to serve them.
Yeah, they might be rebelling against you. They might hate your guts, but you still have a duty that's higher than. I learned this back in police work before becoming a doctor of naturopathy. And even before running for office, there's that principle called interpositional leadership, which, you know, many, many books written by that concept. Matthew Turella does some good work on that one. But the bottom line is, when you stand up and interpose, meaning you stand in the gap against, you know, tyranny for people that might not really appreciate you, all of them, some will, some won't, that's leadership. And I got to tell you, that is not, I repeat, not what I see and observe within the candidacies, within the elections. It's not there now because it's become a different thing. It's not serving people anymore as observantly, I think most people would agree. It's like, what can you do for me? Well, that's not servanthood. Leadership is saying to people, what can I do for you? How can I serve you? You know, really, and that's what we've got to get back to somehow or another.
We really do. And sadly, we're seeing that lack of servanthood on both sides of the aisle. There's certainly Republicans that are in it for what's in it for them. And they're not looking to make the world a better place. They're not looking to make Americans better. It's sad because, you know, Mark, I say that I've never been stabbed in the back by a Democrat, and I haven't. But I'm like a porcupine with all the knives I've taken from Republicans.
Yeah.
And, you know, here are people, we really, it's wrong. I suppose it's not that we put our faith and our trust in them, but we have such high hopes for them. We hope that they're going to be different, that they're going to have a servant's heart. And we think maybe we see it. And then we wake up and we find out we've just been smoking hopium. And they're really not a servant, and they're not in it for we the people. They're not in it to protect the Constitution. It can be disillusioning, and really, it's the hardest part of what we do.
It is. And I've kept something at the forefront of my life for a lot of years. You know, the longer you live on earth, the more mistakes you make. And the more you realize that you have the potential to make any mistake known to mankind and more. You know, I keep in mind that I'm able to become anything goofy and wrong and do the worst things. I'm also capable of good if I get out of my own way. But the bottom line is, we have to understand the simple principle that everyone is capable of letting everyone else down. We as people can fail, and we will. Not that we want to plan on it, but we can and we may. We must understand to temper our expectations is truly wisdom. And when we temper our expectations, and this is very important, and don't place them upon the person, in other words, don't have the Messiah syndrome and just tell them everything that we believe they want to hear so we can get into their good graces and, you know, for the lack of a better term, not politically correct, suck up to them so that we can get an important position. Do you realize that we're doing them the greatest disservice? We really are. We're hurting them. When you feed the ego of a person, and ego is interesting. It really is an acronym. If you get right down to it, the acronym is edging God out. And the more we feed that ego, we begin to feel that. And everybody wants to be liked. So that temptation, Timothy, is there to be appreciated, honored, you know, revered, put in an influential position and blessed. We all want that. That's part of our need of human experience or humanity. But at the same time, we've got to understand that the greatest gift you can give somebody is truth and honesty. Faithful are the wounds of friends, but treacherous are the kisses of the enemy. And that Absolutely. Scripture is a really big deal that we've got to catch. And That's why you and I, man, we're good friends, because I don't have a concern that if I saw you doing something goofy, I'm not that I'm looking for it. I would tell you, but I wouldn't do it publicly. I'd go to you privately, and I know you do the same thing with me. And
we're supposed to
that.
Reprove our brothers. Exactly.
Yes. To make us better.
And I want to draw a clear distinction here though, Mark, because you said the word mistake, and look, I've got a PhD in mistakes.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? Every time I've made a really big mistake, it's because I've been behind the wheel of the bus. It's like I get behind the wheel of the bus and my first instinct is, oh, look, there's a ditch. Let's go drive into it.
Yeah.
So you know, the hardest thing for me is taking my hands off the wheel and letting the big guy steer. And when he steers, man, we go straight down the highway. But it's tough because it's like, okay, well, when am I supposed to act? When am I supposed to not act? But those are mistakes, Mark, okay? Yeah. What we're seeing too much of today is malice. What we're seeing too much of today are intentional, wrongful acts done for wrongful purposes, greed, power, greed for money, greed for power, malice, actual malice, trying to hurt people. The Oster article in The Atlantic calling for amnesty. Basically, the old thing, you can say all these horrible things about people, and then what? You're just supposed to say bygones, like Denny Crane, right?
Right.
Bygones. No. Mistakes weren't made on both sides. You and I have been wrong about precisely nothing since SARS-CoV-2 hit the airwaves. Nothing. And it's not that we're that great. It's just that we looked at the evidence. We looked at the data. We studied the science. Everything we did came from a place of truth. Everything we said was backed up by truth and science and data. Nothing they said was. So, I mean, it was really kind of a no-brainer. But now they want bygones? It's like, I'm Catholic, and we have a sacrament called confession, reconciliation. And in order to receive the grace of the Holy Spirit and to have your sins forgiven, you have to apologize, but you also have to make restitution in the form of doing penance. You have to, go out and affirmatively do something to show that you're willing to amend your life. And that's the third point. You have to have a firm amendment of purpose. You have to have a firm desire to change and not sin again. Of course, you're going to, because you're human. Mm-hmm. But you have to at least have the attitude that I'm going to try my best. I'm going to make a firm commitment to not doing these things again. We're not seeing any of that from the other side. And they're not asking for forgiveness. They're asking for amnesty. And therein lies the difference.
Totally agree. When I was in law enforcement, Timothy, I learned some powerful lessons in dealing with people that continued, to commit crimes. And again, people committed crimes for various reasons, and they had all had consequences, right? Whether they wanted them or not. But there were a few people that actually could look at you with a straight face and have zero conscience after shooting a girl in the head who was 14 years old, dragging her body to the street and setting it on fire, and me having to arrest that person. And when you look in the eyes of someone that has no conscience, it's the definition of insanity / sociopathic behavior. And there are so many people.
Talk about looking into the abyss.
Yeah, and I've done that. And I've seen it more today. More today. And I'm not saying this to be cynical. I'm saying this only from my own experience in life. I've seen that behavior. It might not be overt murder and arson, but I've seen that behavior more and more today in more and more people, where there's no conscience, there's no moral compass, there's no virtuous measurement anymore. It's just like not there. And that concerns me, because you mentioned the evil that is, and it is. And there's a truth out there that's superior to all this that we have to seek. You know, it's not just what you want to believe. But I see this happening today, and we had better understand that that type of sociopathic, unconscionable behavior will continue, because that's the nature of the beast, literally and figuratively. That's the nature of the world. That's where we're going. However, this is where we can spin it around and have some hope. The very same thing that unwound the lies of COVID is called truth. The good thing about this world, as much as they try to suppress truth, truth is always superior and will always reign. Truth is always available. No matter how much darkness, no matter how much you hide, truth will never be suppressed. And when we seek truth, we will find it. And we're supposed to communicate truth, be hope. And truth and hope is light, and that light will expose darkness. And that's the lesson for us. So what's our job? Not to go out here and hunt up darkness. Our job is to be the truth. And when we do that, I just think that we need to be aware of this kind of stuff, but not scared of it and not dwell on it, but focus on what we can do at least 80% of the time, right?
Right. And all it takes, folks, is a single match in order to dispel the darkness. All you need, you don't need to be a roaring bonfire. You just need to be a single match, a single flame. Dispel the darkness around you. If each one of us dispels the darkness around us, it's going to be a pretty bright future. I'm Timothy Shea. You're listening to The Reckoning on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
Former Detective Chief Inspector Peter Fox had a 36-year long history with the New South Wales Police Force, during which time he investigated countless episodes or allegations of child sexual abuse in the Hunter region of New South Wales, and this involved certain members of the Catholic Church.
The initial matter involved a now convicted priest by the name of Vince Ryan. He was a prolific predator. There's been a lot of documentation on his offences, but I think I became aware that much of this abuse, much of the rape of children had literally been going on in the Catholic Church, which was immediately behind my detective's office in Cecil. And of course, that piqued a lot of interest in the community, and especially when he was charged. And there were attempts by various members of the clergy to conceal or avoid Vince Ryan being arrested. He was moved at the last minute from Cecil to Taree. But nevertheless, he was arrested and has since served quite an extensive time in jail.
McBride and Brennan, with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Your climate doomsday clock keeps on slipping away. Oh my.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
While attending the United Nations Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, otherwise known as Sharm el-Shakedown, I came across the Climate Tipping Point Clock.
Here I am at the United Nations Climate Summit in Egypt with the Climate Tipping Point Clock ticking away behind me.
That's right, certain doom. I went back 2 days later and discovered this.
We're now down to 6 years, 255 days, 2 hours, 6 minutes, 29 seconds.
So you see, time does keep on ticking into our climate future. You better shape up, or the UN says we're all doomed. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
This is today's news talk and the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to The Reckoning. My guest this hour, Dr. Mark Sherwood. Mark, you said something interesting just before the break about the increase in sociopathic behavior and psychotic behavior, whether you call it borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, sociopathic tendencies, psychopathic tendencies. What we're dealing with is a breakdown in social structure, social norms, social standards. You know, when I was a boy, and I just turned 60, but gee, it sure doesn't seem that long ago. And you know, it's funny because when I was a boy and we're talking to my grandparents about when they were children, well, they were teenagers in the teens, right? And this is in the 60s and 70s, so that's a long time ago. Well, the 70s don't seem that long ago, do they? I mean, we had the 70s show. that's kind of kept it current. And movies and popular culture from that era are very common today. So the 70s don't seem as long ago today as the teens did in the 60s and 70s. But there's no mistaking it. It was 50 years ago, 55 years ago. But if I was over at a friend's house and we were goofing around, you know, Mrs. Anderson or Mrs. Thornton or Mrs. Wayne or Mrs. Bianchi had cuffed me in the head. And then I'd get home and I'd get cuffed again because, you know, she'd punish me. And then while I'm on my way home on my bike, she'd call my mother and I'd get it when I got home again because we were held accountable. And my parents always, especially my dad, always instilled in us that, you know, when you leave this house, you're representing the family. And I think we've completely lost sense of that. And I blame these kids' parents, our peers, because they didn't hold their children accountable. They didn't set standards. You know, someone asked me, my two children were exceptionally well behaved. And someone asked me how I got them to be that way. And I said, I didn't. They said, what do you mean? And I said, children will live up to or down to whatever is expected of them. I expect a lot from my children. They achieve a lot. They act accordingly. They behave because they know they're expected to behave. You know, these parents, God love them, that are bringing trucks and dollies and things of Cheerios to church. It's like, you know, we had crying rooms back in the day for infants. So if you bring your infant to church and the infant's fussy, or, you know, you could go back in the crying room with the infant. It wouldn't disrupt the mass. But it became almost like a daycare center sometimes with the kids running the trains and the trucks on the pews. Yeah. And I heard a great sermon by a priest a couple weeks ago and said that your children are not going to die unless they have some profoundly rare medical condition, in which case they probably shouldn't be in church in the first place. They're not going to die if they don't have Cheerios for 45 minutes. They're not going to die if they can't play with their dolly or their truck for 45 minutes. No, I mean, it was always a joke. My dad will still say, okay, he's 86, I'm 60, my brother's 56, and my dad will still say, do I need to sit between the two of you?
Well, it's fascinating, you know, like it goes back to boundaries, doesn't it? And the greatest example, real-time example that people can understand is the border crisis, right? Boundaries are there for a reason. When boundaries are not secured and boundaries are not held tight, you will get things into areas that it's not supposed to be in. And when that happens over the course of time, it creates this massive infection of dysfunction. And that will always create death of that thing that the boundary is supposed to protect. The second part of this is the idea of boundaries with health. You know, I've said this before too. We have the immune system. That's our greatest boundaries. You know, it protects us from infection and even disallowing things to come in. Well, we live in an immunocompromised state, Timothy. We eat standard American diet processed foods, which creates a disintegration of that boundary. Things get in there and it destroys the thing, right? That's the second example. Third example, and I'm trying to drive a point home here where people really catch this, is the structure and the culture around the way we do government right now. There are boundaries that are around the states and the people. These boundaries are the 10th Amendment. These boundaries say the federal government has got limits, but we the people have allowed those boundaries to become encroached upon. And the more we have those boundaries encroached upon, the more they'll get infected, and the more eventually it will create death. And now we have the federal government, which is basically the child in the relationship with the states and the people being the parent. The child is now running the show. It's infected the parent and all of our boundaries from a country, whether it be physically, emotionally, or governmentally, have been destroyed. We cannot survive physically, emotionally, or governmentally if we don't have boundaries. And those boundaries can only be understood, Timothy, when we have boundaries in our own personal life, which says that I am going to learn to have discipline in my own life because it's the right thing to do. And you're right. When we lost discipline as an individual human being and the boundaries were just broken down and we could do what we want to do, no wonder all those other three things that I nailed and spoke about are very profoundly apparent to, in today's world.
They really are. And when, as soon as you said boundaries, a thought occurred to me that I hadn't thought before. Robert Frost was the poet laureate of the United States. He read a poem at John F. Kennedy's inauguration. Great poet, New England poet, wrote about New England scenes. One, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Eve, has always resonated with me. There are two paths to go by, and I took the one less traveled, and that has made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote another one called Mending Wall, and people might recognize the opening line, something there is that doesn't love a wall. And the poem is about his next-door neighbor and he out mending the wall between their properties. And people need to understand the soil in New England is extremely rocky. So what the industrious farmers would do, and they'd plow up a rock, they'd carry it over, and they'd make a wall to keep in the sheep, to keep in the cows, to keep out the neighbor's sheep from their crops, to keep out the neighbor's cows. And it's funny, we've got all these people with the, you know, the climate is going to end. And we just heard that there's a climate doomsday clock. And Joe Bastardi was on the show a few weeks ago saying, well, you know, what errant nonsense this all is. And I pointed out that if you take a walk in the woods in New England, you're going to come across stone walls. Because there are more trees in New England today than when Thoreau was at Walden Pond, because we don't burn trees for fuel anymore. So the poem is really kind of a lyrical image painting with words of a man and his next door neighbor going out in the springtime after the heave and the thaw of the frost has knocked the wall apart, and they're rebuilding the wall. They're mending the wall. That's why the poem is entitled Mending Wall. And the line that keeps coming, the neighbor keeps saying, good fences make good neighbors. And, mm-hmm. and we take that as, you know, there's an awful lot of truth in that. Good fences make good neighbors. We know where the property boundaries are. We don't overstep on each other's rights. Your animals don't bother my crops. My animals don't bother your crops. But that's not the intention that Frost had when he wrote the poem. It's a subversive poem. He's criticizing the man who is saying good fences make good neighbors. Frost is arguing against walls defining boundaries. It really is part of the 1950s, 1960s counterculture, modernism, cultural Marxism, whatever you want to call it, but the tearing down of society. And I think that even in our lauded, exalted culture, because Robert Frost is one of the most famous poems. If you ask an American on the street, name a poem, name a poet. Mm-hmm. If you ask any, let me put it this way. If you ask anybody over 40 that actually learned something when they were in school, other than the fact that Heather can have two mommies and some men have babies.
Oh,
if you ask anybody that actually learned some literature and some poetry to name a poet, odds are they'll say Robert Frost. Right? He was looked at as a great American poet. And yet this is a very subversive idea he's pushing here. How boundaries are bad, how walls between people are bad. Build bridges, not walls. And no, a lot of times, and getting to your health analogy, leaky gut syndrome is proof of the fact that boundaries matter.
Well, people don't understand the idea of leaky gut syndrome and you bring it up, I'm just going to take a couple minutes to break that down so people will get
that. That's why I teed you up.
Yeah, I know. That was like a hanging curveball about belt high down the middle of the plate. So when we take in food, we bring it in through our mouth and it goes, after we chew it, masticate, it goes down the esophagus, drops through the little skin flap called the esophageal sphincter into our stomach, and eventually from that into our small intestine, large intestine, and out the colon, you know, right? It's a closed system. It's a closed tube, and the immune system is surrounding that. About 65% of, or maybe more, of our immune system is right around the gut. It's because when we eat something or consume something, it doesn't mean it actually entered our body. But it went into a system of checks and balances. And so it has to get sorted out in there, and not to be gross, but some things need to go out and some things.
Well,
need to
in fact, as a biologist, I'll tell you, this is one little factoid that people don't think of. The interior of your gut is really the exterior of your body. Your body surrounds it, but it's not your body.
No, and you know, drug dealers know that. Remember, they used to smuggle in cocaine through the balloons. They knew that, right? And so the bottom line is there is this transportation or assimilation process where the body says, yes, these are good nutrients. I'm going to allow these to go inside of my body and enter in the bloodstream, enter into this channel of life, if you will. And these little check stations on the epithelial lining or epithelial cells of our stomach are really like toll gates. You know, like, stop. Are you good? Are you what I want? Yes. And they go on through and they get transported down to our cells, to where the cells receive them and they put them to work. And then the cells create this ATP through mitochondrial production so the cells can run and do their job. And all life is dependent upon ATP production. So leaky gut is when the, good way to put it, is the pole boosts have been blown out. And so everything is coming through, maybe what should, and many things that shouldn't. And the immune system is going like, I don't know what's going on. And it would be like the state troopers not being able to stop everybody and calling in the National Guard and then the military to go stop these things. And so we see that happen, and eventually that process through the overregulation of the immune system through this leaky gut phenomena can create things such as autoimmune conditions, which are so rampant today. And it didn't start to elevate in the frequency and amount of these autoimmune conditions until the government got involved in the food supply and began to genetically modify things such as wheat, corn, and soy, heavily subsidize them, make them cheap. And folks, listen to me carefully. I love you. I'm giving you truth. Those foods right there in their genetically modified, chemically laden, processed state create leaky gut, which leads to leaky brain, which leads to heart disease, which leads to autoimmune conditions, which leads to immunocompromise, which can lead to cancers. So there you go. There's leaky gut 101.
Yeah. And the food pyramid came out in the 1970s with grains on the bottom. You're supposed to have four servings of grains. No. You know, fats were at the top and proteins were right under it. You're supposed to have very little fat and just a little bit more protein. You know, Klaus Schwab came out yesterday and said, meat is going to be a treat. How about that, Mark?
You know, well, I'm not surprised, because what he and Bill Gates and them are doing, and this is very profound, and I want to come back when it's appropriate time to make a comment on the food pyramid, because this will blow your mind in some of my studies. But the reason they want to eliminate meat is because they want to replace it with the soy or the artificial meat burgers, the Impossible Burger. Now, people need to understand the Impossible Burger is nothing more than an estrogen-mimicking, endocrine-disrupting compound. What did I mean by that? It's going to drive estrogen. It's going to make people gain belly fat. It's going to put more estrogen-like hormones into society, making men more like women. And we're going to see this, and we're already seeing it with weight gain in children. So that's what they want to do. They want to attack the seed of mankind. It's really a war on testosterone, if you will.
Well, it is. In fact, men under 40 have one-third the sperm and significantly lowered motility of the sperm that they do have as compared to men of our generation when we were under 40. 77% of Americans under the age of 25 are ineligible for military service. They're physically ineligible. They're too soft. They're too fat. Mm-hmm. They cannot be saved with 15 weeks of basic training. Think about that. Three quarters of our military age young men and women, men mostly, because I've known women that have been in the military and they've been fantastic. But
yes,
if you've got a frontline warfighter, like it or not, you need a big, strong, virile man. Just look at the Soviet Union's recruiting video.
Oh my gosh, that's impressive.
You know, it looked like a line of Ivan Dragos banging out push-ups at 5 a.m. on a wet metal floor. And it's like, okay, yeah, these guys are what you want your military to be. But that's not what these leftists want our military to be. And they've been consistently undermining it, just like they've been undermining our culture. But it all started with undermining our faith in God. And I want to pick that up after the break. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Even though it looks like the Republicans will take control of the House of Representatives and conceivably could do the same in the Senate, election night was a huge disappointment for the GOP. Exit polls show that while inflation was voters' top concern, abortion was right up there, and that's where Republicans blew it. After the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in June, the Dems went into attack mode on abortion, and rather than fight back, Republicans let them control the narrative on the issue. No fight. While Democrats in the media portrayed the decision as the end of legal abortions, period, the fact, of course, is the issue will be left up to each individual state. And while Democrats claimed they wanted to codify Roe into law, they all voted for bills in the House and Senate allowing for abortion on demand right up until birth, doing away with the restrictions that Roe provided. Even though only a small minority of Americans favor abortion without restrictions, the Republicans elected to keep quiet. And Republican Senator Lindsey Graham even talked about a national ban on abortion, which was as stupid as it gets. If they're going to keep running away from a winning issue, Republicans will have a hard time winning anything going forward. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
In times of fear, World Vision is there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've been standing with kids and families through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and helping rebuild lives. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
Democracy is under attack. The Australian government wants to control free speech and the internet. Disagree with what government is saying, and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to The Reckoning. My guest this hour, Dr. Mark Sherwood. Mark, it's no coincidence that the communists infiltrated the Catholic Church in the 1930s, that Vatican II was infiltrated, that the liturgy has been changed from the Mass of the Ages, which was for 2,000 years, into something that it shouldn't be at all. St. Gallen Mafia, you know, everybody talks about Davos, right? Davos is a nice little ski town in Switzerland, but Davos has become the eponym for the World Economic Forum because they meet every year in Davos. Well, there's another nice little Swiss ski town called St. Gallen, G-A-L-L-E-N. And there's a wonderful book called The St. Gallen Mafia talking about how some of these radical, progressive, I say communist cardinals conspired to force Pope Benedict the 16th to resign. And they installed our South American Jesuit Bergoglio. I call him Frankie Two Fingers because he's flipping off the Holy Spirit, the church, and 2,000 years of tradition with both hands. You know, it's funny. Pope Benedict had to resign because of poor health, and he's in better health today at 96 than Frankie Two Fingers is. Isn't that funny how it works? It was a coup, but they came for the church first. Then they came for the Protestant churches, the mainline Protestant churches, the Lutheran Church, the Anglican Communion. They're coming now for the evangelical churches. We've seen an awful lot of churches being led by people that are not godly. It's because, you know, the people associate the sex abuse scandal with the Catholic Church. It's, well, you know, we certainly had our part in it, but it's endemic to every faith because it's endemic to the military. It's endemic to Hollywood. Just witness Harvey Weinstein and others. Kevin Spacey. It's endemic to corporate America. It's because it's endemic to humanity, right? It's part of the human condition. Anytime you get a group of people together, you're going to have all the manifestations, good and bad, of our human nature. But there's been a systemic, coordinated, targeted attack on the things that bring us together: religion, professional sports, mm-hmm. culture, the arts, movies, music, anything that can bring us together has been systematically destroyed and subverted to push a satanic, demonic message in many cases, openly in the case of Jay-Z and Beyonce. I mean, I'm not being a crazy conspiracy theorist. Just take them at their own word. Jay-Z said that you cannot be a success if you do not bow to our father, Satan. It's like, well, mm-hmm. that's right. That's one man, or that's one entity before whom I will never bow. But it has been targeted. It has been systemic. It's been an attack on our culture, our values, our boundaries, our ethics, our morals. And it's because we're seeing these manifestations of a spiritual battle here in the physical realm.
Well, let's go back to look at the time of Jesus after he was baptized. He was led off into the desert to be tempted. Let us not forget that one of the temptations was where Satan pulled him up on top of a mountain and said, I'm going to paraphrase for effect, hey, Jesus, look at all these kingdoms out here. Look at all that wealth. Look at all that power, that money, that influence. And I will give all this to you if you will bow down to me. And of course, Jesus refuted him with his own father's words. Sure. Didn't take that offer. He said, basically, no deal. Right. But the point is, Jesus did not refute that statement that Satan made. He did not say that what you said is not true. Therefore, let us understand that power that Satan has, that the evil that is in the world, is still available. And Timothy, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the oldest temptation back to that known to mankind is money, fame, influence, and power. And the root of all evil is the love of money. And mm-hmm. this is available to all of us. You and I could do that too. You know, that's true. It's not something that's like a shock. It's been around since the beginning of time. If we
that great blues myth that spawned an amazing song went down to the crossroads.
Totally. Right. And we could just bow down to Satan if we choose to. And it's really about the battle that is good versus evil, light versus darkness. It's sort of the epitome of and the theme of all these movies, you know, right? Unfortunately, now we have transgressed to where we neglect the greater value and the greater wealth and the greater joy for something bigger than the world. It's been fascinating to look at that, you know, and, you know, I live my life in a way, and you do too, that, yeah, we may not have this or that, but it's irrelevant because the cause we live for is higher than the world we live in. It's bigger than this idea of this world. And so we see that happen and people are drawn to that. And unfortunately, the church that is drawn to that too. And I'll give an example. In the evangelical church, you have these celebrity pastors right now that are living a life that is based upon the tax loopholes around the 501c3. Not knocking it, I'm just saying this is what it is. They're unapproachable. And they're unreachable. And when you become unapproachable and unreachable, you become unteachable. That's also a premise. And you can't get to these people. And they're not pastors. No, no. They're nothing more than pinup dolls giving a motivational speech for 15 minutes on Sunday. And you don't even know them. And so it's been a drift it's been a subtle shift. It's been 1 degree, you know, every year. And then now here we are. And we've got to keep in mind that that temptation for money, fame, power, and influence is out there for us. Here we are on national radio, right? It would be very easy for us. This is very honest.
Yeah.
International. Okay, so here we are. And it would be very easy for us to say, oh, my goodness, I sure want people to know who Timothy Shea is and Mark Sherwood. Boy, that feels good. I'd love to have them tell me how good I sound on the radio. And that would make us feel good. That would make us get listeners, and people would love that. And that might mean the ability to grow influence and maybe even some wealth. That's good, right? But we've got to be careful with allowing that to surpass the bigger cause. And going back to what I said earlier, edging God out is truly feeding the ego. And we just cannot do that because it's out here available to all of us. And my wife and I have tried to keep each other in check with that for all these years, you know?
Yeah, twice in the last 8 years, I've lost a third to a half of my audience on two different occasions. Lost a third one time, lost half the audience another time. And it's because I refused to not speak the truth. And a lot of people don't like to hear the truth. It's like, well, you might not like to hear it, but I got to look the guy in the mirror in the face every morning. And if I modify my message to what you want to hear, I'm not doing you any service, and I'm not doing anyone else who's listening any service either. So I'll stick to the truth. You can either choose to hear it. You don't have to like everything I say. Hopefully I present things that are new to you. Hopefully I give people different perspectives on things. I bring guests on that have information that people might not have had before. Hopefully I do it in an interesting and entertaining way. And if you like it, that's great. And if you don't like it, well, there are plenty of other shows out there, and that's fine. But, you know, I do what I do. And love me or hate me, you always know who I am and what I'm going to bring you, because I remain pretty consistent. If you hear your pastor say, Jesus came to me in a vision last night and he wants me to have a G5, I've only got a G4 and he wants me to have a G5, folks, it's time for you to find another church.
Come on. Amen to that. Oh, I wanted to make sure people knew that and make that one comment about the food pyramid. This is interesting. And there is a great parallel that's happening right now with that. That food pyramid, what kind of structure do we see in Egypt? The pyramid. It's a dual thing. Well, the people of Israel were in bondage in Egypt, and they were in bondage of Egypt in a time of famine, and grain was the centerpiece of that particular time. And they become, and so grains, therefore, are always symbolic of famine and lack. And pyramids and lack are always symbolic of being in bondage in Egypt. And you remember, Moses tried to lead them out, but they were stubborn and wanted to go back. Well, today we got the food pyramid. It does say at the bottom, it did back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, it said 6 to 11 servings of breads and grains. They highly subsidized, highly processed. It put people in bondage of addiction to dependence upon these government. And now we're stuck here. We're sick, beat down, broke, and busted, depending on the same people. And sometimes, Timothy, I feel like Moses must have felt, let my people go. And the people don't want to go because they're too comfortable being in bondage.
They're a stiff-necked people.
Totally. Now, I like go around and I'm saying, you know that eating that stuff is making you sick. Yes. Then why do you do it? I just can't stop. I know I need to stop, but. Well, everybody's got a butt. But let your butt go away and do the right thing despite your butt.
Let your butt go away and watch your butt go away.
Come on. That's a Freudian, not a slip. That's actually a truth right there.
Yeah. And I counseled my children. I would take them grocery shopping. We're going to shop the outside walls of the supermarket.
Yes.
You can have anything you want on the outside wall of the supermarket. You know, you go into the left, we got our salad mix, the different bag salads. Now, you got to be careful because some of those have some things in them that aren't so good. You don't need salad in a bag, folks. You can buy some lettuce, some spring mix, mesclun, arugula, baby spinach, whatever. Even if you like iceberg, God love you. Get your greens. Get some carrots, some radishes, some cucumbers, whatever else you like. You can make your own dressing. You know, here's a radical concept. You can make your own salad dressing. All it takes is a little oil, vinegar, some salt, pepper, some spices maybe, a little mustard, a little honey. You can make your own to your own taste. Why do you want to buy a bottle of crap that's full of hydrogenated stuff that's going to go straight to your waistline? Eat healthy. Just shop the outside wall. Then you're going to go down and you're going to get the meat department. We got some fish. We got dairy, cheese, eggs, yogurt, all good stuff on the outside wall of the supermarket. All the crap's in the middle. All the American standard diet stuff is in the middle.
Yeah, you know, it's like even when I was working law enforcement, people that kept committing crimes, I got to know several of them, you know, arrested multiple times. Along this line,
call those say to me, repeat customers, right?
Oh yeah, repeat offenders, and they would say to me like, Mark, you don't understand. I don't know how to exist outside of that environment. I don't know how to live, and they were very honest, you know. And it forced me to really hear them and appreciate that perspective of honesty. And we become, you know, you actually become pretty close to the people you arrest if you arrest them multiple times, and I always treated them right. But I began to understand how easy it is to fall into a place that is comfortable, but it's the wrong place to be. It's actually bondage. And so many people today are in bondage, in dependence upon the government, dependence upon, you know, big pharma, big medicine, and even dependence, as you alluded to, upon the big church. You know, I need someone to teach me the Bible because I can't do it myself. And, you know, so this results in people that don't know how to care for themselves, and we don't know how to self-govern. And that whole idea of self-government is really the epitome of the problem that is today. And we've got to get back to that, because that's the foundation of the wonderful blessing that we have, you know, in my own country, which is the United States of America. And it's still a country where other countries, you know, I know we're all over the world, people still want to come here because of the opportunity. It's a good thing, you know? And so we've got to get that back again somehow. And I just appreciate, you know, the idea of that. And we've got to, like, instill that again in people somehow or another.
We absolutely do. And one caveat to what you said about teaching yourself the Bible, you got to do a whole lot of study, because there's an awful lot of ear tickling out there, folks. There's an awful lot of people that taught themselves the Bible that taught it to themselves wrong. And, you know, so 2,000 years of teaching authority isn't a bad thing to be able to rely on. Mark, did you ever come across someone, you mentioned bondage, did you ever come across someone that intentionally reoffended in order to get sent back inside because they couldn't exist outside? My uncle was a prison minister. He was a priest, and he had prison ministry at our local jail here. And he would tell me stories about guys that would intentionally reoffend because they needed the structure of prison. They needed to be told what to do, where to go, when to go, what to wear, what to eat, when to eat, how to eat. They couldn't survive on their own. They literally did not have the life skills necessary to structure their lives and keep it together on the outside. Did you ever come across that?
I did. True story. And I actually wept tears this day. And I remember it just like now. It's the same emotions, and I get teary-eyed. It was Thanksgiving Day. And I remember I was working that day. We got double time and a half. That was big money back in those days. Thanksgiving Day, I was patrolling in a neighborhood and driving down the road slowly, nobody out because, you know, everybody was in with their families. I was driving through this parking lot of a grocery store. And this guy comes out and he runs in front of my car and he starts waving his arms. And I stopped and I said, "Sir, are you okay?" He said, "I'm drunk." I said, "You are?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm drunk." He goes, "Can't you see me slur my speech? Can't you hear me slur my speech and all that? Can't you see me like I'm drunk?" And I said, "What are you talking about, man?" He goes, "No, take me to jail right now. I'm drunk." And I went over to him, and sure enough, he smelt drunk, but he didn't act drunk. And he said, I'm telling you, officer, I'm drunk, or I'm going to assault you right now if you don't take me to jail. Okay. You know, so I cuffed him up behind his back, put him in my car, front seat. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm hungry. I don't know how to find a meal.
That is heartbreaking. Mark, you're a beautiful human being. Look forward to having you back again on The Reckoning. Folks, it only takes one small flame to dispel the darkness around you. Be that flame. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Don't do that. Stand up. Fight back. Teach people in your sphere of influence what the right way to do is. Until next time, God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.